Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello, Chicago!
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll be talking with Damon Locks about Black Monument Ensemble. We'll also bid farewell to the rapper Biz Markie and hear from some of our listeners. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, some buried treasures, Jim.
Yes, a show we love, Greg, whether we are hearing about these treasures from emails from publicists, pokes in the ribs from friends, how come you haven't reviewed X, social media chatter, you name it, we've always got our antenna up to check out sounds that aren't necessarily getting hyped anywhere that we are excited to share with you. So I'm gonna lead us off here, Greg, and as you know, especially lately, I am a huge fan of that wonderful French pop, that world that is combining electronic dance music and pop and disco and house and psychedelia. We've had a couple of good records so far this year along those lines, and I am just now catching up with a duo named Polo and Pan that have been making great music since 2013. Three EPs, a debut album in 2017, and now a new album that just came out called Cyclorama. Our old friend Bobby Gale, one of the few people I actually would call a friend in the publicist world, you know, wrote to me and said, "Hey, Jim, I don't know how your summer's going, but what I've wanted all summer is something playful, carefree, and just a tad risque, like a day at the beach in France." And I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. Now, Bobby, this music better measure up. And indeed, it does. I'm late to this group. It's led by a producer duo, Paul Armand Delisle and Alexandre Grispan, with various collaborators, including some wonderful female vocalists. And again, mixing all these elements of that 60s French pop world with a modern electronic consciousness. The song I'm going to play, and I looked up the French pronunciation, is Les Jolies Choses. It's about a day in the sandy dunes of Cap Ferret, France. I don't know exactly where that is, but, you know, a beach in France sounds like that's A-OK to me. You know, it's a fantastic album because I've gone back now and listened to everything they've done before. And this, I think, is a leap forward. I mean, just listen to this and tell me it's not putting you in a better, more summery mood. Polo and Pan.
Cette forêt de pin, le sable qui coulait entre tes mains, un sorbet de groseille au sel marin, le lever du soleil de bon matin, faire l'amour au réveil avant midi, le petit déjeuner servi au lit, s'embrasser mouillé, se mettre à l'abri, caressé par le vol d'un colibri. Mais peu à peu mes souvenirs s'effacent.
Les Jolies Choses by Polo and Pan. Tell me you didn't love that.
No, I mean, first of all, I'm shocked because I know you hate the beach. And
I do hate the beach.
Beach music for me.
Yeah, I mean, if I have to go to the beach, you know, I would go in France.
Yeah, well, they got great beaches there. I'm going to swim across the English Channel, Jim. We're going to go to Liverpool, England.
All right.
For this next group, they are the Mysterines. They're fairly new, came out in the last couple of years. I found out about them because the lead singer, who was then a teenager, I think she was all of 18 years old, Leah Metcalf, collaborated with Paul Weller, you know, the grand old man of Britpop back in the days of The Jam, et cetera, on one of his projects a couple of years ago. And I loved the voice. I mean, you know, you could see why Weller wanted to work with her. They put out a couple of EPs since then, and they're apparently getting a record ready for release later this year. It's a quintet from Liverpool with Metcalf as kind of the linchpin. She started out on the open mic singer-songwriter scene and then clearly had a voice that was bigger, better equipped for rock. Just a huge voice, a lot of soul qualities to it. Now barely in her 20s, but that resonance and wildness to her voice. There's sort of a feral quality. You know, she projects an older, wiser personality, but, you know, think she's maybe 21 years old now. So here's a track from the Mysterines, Who's Your Girl, on Sound Opinions.
Who's your girl?
Who's Your Girl from the Mysterines, a brand new band out of Liverpool, England, debut album later this year.
Well, when we do Buried Treasures, we do share our picks with each other in advance, unlike when we do the best albums of the year or other list shows. And I'm green with envy. I'm so envious, I'm angry. How did you get to this music before me? Because it is such a, you know, that fine line between stoner rocking and garage rock with a ferocious female presence up front. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for this album.
Yeah, me neither. I agree with you. The guitar player is really good too. A guy by the name of Callum Thompson. He really, you know, he fits that voice very well with his tone.
Wow, yeah, great stuff. I'm going to go to the R&B tip now, Greg, although it's a little R&B, a little soul, a little Afrofusion, some blues, some R&B, a lingering fondness for old Donna Summer. I'm talking about an American-Nigerian singer-songwriter who goes by the name of Sweet Valley High. Those words are easy to say, but she spells them SWTVALLIHI, Sweet Valley High. It's also the name of her band. You know, this is a great conglomeration of sounds, recognizing or staying loyal to no one genre and really covering the waterfront on a new album that's just out this month. And this is the first single from it. It's called Over It. Over what, you may ask, says this young American Nigerian woman. With this track, I wanted to encourage people to let all the people that cross you and all the negativity go. See who's for you and see who's not. And those who are not, tell them bye-bye. All right, yeah, over it. Yeah, Sweet Valley High. We are over many things in 2021, but not this music. Here it is on Sound Opinions.
All the times I thought about it, you hold. It was about a week ago. Where did we go? I was all alone.
Valley High.
Over it. I mean, I can hear the Donna Summer. I can hear other heroes she's talking about, like Portishead and Fela. There's a lot going on in that groove.
Yeah, I was most impressed by that disorienting swirl that was kind of, you know, underneath that track, that background for the track.
And yeah.
Sort of surrounding that melancholy vocal. It was a nice... Put me in a mood, you know?
Well, I gather she is the producer, but she doesn't use that term. She uses sound designer.
Yeah.
And I like that. And that is a complicated, wonderful track.
It sound designer is a great way to describe it, because you really can't put your finger on what is making those sounds. And
yeah.
And that's kind of cool for that reason. Speaking of talented women, Jamie Branch is an artist I want to highlight. This is the next track. She is another person who does a lot of production work, in addition to being a classically trained trumpet player and composer. She's been part of multiple scenes. I got familiar with her work because she did a lot of work in the Chicago jazz scene over the last decade plus. She's also done things in New York and Baltimore, contributed to a wide range of projects, not only in jazz, but punk, avant-garde, indie rock, electronic music, hip-hop. She's collaborated with TV on the Radio and Spoon, you know, for, you know, people who are more interested in the rock end of things. But I just think her work is it's not genre specific, but incredibly inventive every time out. She's finally gotten around to releasing a record with her name on it. I guess she's done a couple of smaller things that have her name as the sole person on the cover. But for the most part, she's worked in group projects. This is an album called Fly or Die. And what a band she's put together. It's a quartet. Tamika Reed is the cello player on this in this ensemble. And she's a legendary figure in the avant-garde jazz scene. And Chad Taylor, the drummer, another legend, Art Ensemble of Chicago veteran.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done a ton of projects that are also... cross-genre. So Jamie Branch with some very like-minded collaborators, and I just love the explosiveness of the drums on this track, the percussion bed, and then Jamie comes in with the trumpet flying over the top, you know, Tamika Reed's cello kind of counter-harmony there. I just love the composition. If you want a little stairway into jazz, contemporary jazz, you could do a lot worse than Jamie Branch. Here's a track called Theme 001 from Jamie Branch's Fly or Die album on Sound Opinions.
Theme 001. I love that, Greg. You knew I would. That African percussion. I didn't know that was Chad Taylor. Makes perfect sense now. I mean, the jazz sensibility that runs through it, but with that almost Fela Kuti-like, his name again, African percussion. Just fantastic stuff.
Yep, we've got some buried treasures that we hope you will like, and we want to know if you have any that you would like to share. Let us know in our Facebook group or in our Patreon community, or you can leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Coming up, we're going to share more buried treasures, talk with Damon Locks, say goodbye to Bismarcky, and hear listener feedback. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know when you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. We both have one more buried treasure to share with you each on this episode. I'll go first. Greg, I am going to Toronto to a group that has some roots that stretch back several years to a bunch of different indie bands. I guess there was a group called Quest for Fire. I vaguely remember them. Two of the driving members, Chad Ross and Andrew Mazinski, went on to form this new band, Comet Control, with Sophie Trudeau, who was in Godspeed You Black Emperor, some indie underground veterans, in other words. And what they are doing is, I mean, it's just so right up my alley. I hate to be a cliche, but a mix of that cosmic rock, krautrock sound of Germany from the early 70s, the British shoegaze movement, spiritualized ride, a timeless sort of psychedelic vibe that stretches back to, 13th Floor Elevators and Revolver by the Beatles. Mm-hmm. How do you go wrong? It's been done many times, right? But to really make me, especially as a super aficionado of this genre, snap up, wow! Yeah, more, please! So it's a sextet now from Toronto that's been kicking around since 2013, but they are about to issue in late August their third studio album, Inside the Sun, on New York's wonderfully grungy and cosmic TP Records. The song is called Secret Life by Comet Control. Comet Control, Secret Life. Am I a cliche for loving that so much?
Well, I tell you, you talk about setting your guitars on 11. I think these guys are like at 111. I mean, wow. I love the way it just comes in and blows your head off. So
yeah, you think they've heard Loveless by My Bloody Valentine,
My last pick is a band that may be familiar to Sound Opinions listeners if you are a veteran listener to the show, a group called Blackjacks. That's BLKJKS. Shorthand for Blackjacks, from South Africa. I had them in my top 10 in 2009 when their debut album was released on Secretly Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about the band through other channels when they were releasing independent music out of South Africa, which is extremely rare. This generation of South African rockers coming out of the post-apartheid era. Apartheid ends roughly 1994. These were kids back then. They started making music. They were influenced by Western music, but they were also bringing in a lot of the sounds from their native country, which were suddenly exploding with creativity in this post-apartheid vacuum. Hey, we can do our own stuff now,
you know?
They're doing a version of South African hip-hop. They're doing that township music that they knew from their homeland, but they're also influenced by bands like Sonic Youth and Bjork from the West, and bringing in some of that into their music. So everything is going great. They're 2009. They got signed by Secretly Canadian. Mm-hmm. Diplo's a huge fan, brings them to the label. Dave Grohl mentions them, takes them on tour, and then the singer leaves. And then they try to make another album, but the tapes get stolen.
Oh.
So 12 years later, we finally have a new album from this band. It's reconstituted from that original lineup. They were just kids when they made that first record. Now they're older, obviously more mature. What we have here is still a sound very much like that debut album, where they were just cross-cutting across all these styles. And I've heard some people talk about this new album, which is called Ubuntu Before Humans, as a prog rock record.
Mm.
And I'm going, yeah, it's prog rock, except it's from the streets. There's no prog rock that sounds like this. This is a street record. And yes, they are mixing and melding a lot of different influences. They have a few cool friends, too. The Malian guitarist, Vieux Varka Touré, the son of the Malian guitar legend, is playing guitar on this particular track. And every song has its own character. I love this one in particular. It's called Mega Mali Mansa Musa from Blackjacks on Sound Opinions. That is Mega Mali Mansa Musa from Blackjacks on Sound Opinions.
I would have backsold it. I just wanted to hear you say that title again.
Yeah, I
don't. This didn't grab me, Greg. I was thinking, and this is the third time I'm dropping his name in this episode, Fela Kuti Light. That's mm-hmm. That's how it grabbed me. But I haven't heard the whole album.
Well, it's got that Malian guitar style, which kind of dominates it, you know. So I think that's part of it, in that it does have sort of a breezier vibe than some of their other tracks. I thought it was more of a song-oriented track. Some of their other stuff is wilder and more progressive, for lack of a better term. But I think they're still an incredibly inventive group.
I'll listen to the whole album. But I want to know, if you at home, do you have a buried treasure we need to hear? Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, or tell other listeners about it in our Facebook group.
Our next guest has spent a lot of years as a sort of buried treasure, but it's been very nice to see that changing in the past few years. Jim, you and I first got to know Damon Laux as the frontman in Trenchmouth in the early 1990s Chicago post-punk band, whose drummer just happened to be a guy named Fred Armisen.
You know, and after Trenchmouth, Damon spent years leading the Eternals, doing visual art, all sorts of artistic endeavors in the Chicago underground, a real treasure. And now, with Black Monument Ensemble, the world's catching up, big story in the New York Times, all sorts of attention for Damon.
Damon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It is a thrill, Damon. You know, as you know, I have to tell this story every time I run into one of you veterans of Trenchmouth. Very first Chicago band I ever reviewed for the Sun-Times. I went around the corner. I was living on Fletcher in Wrigleyville, and you guys were playing the Avalon, where you had the joy of carrying all your amps and drums up that flight of stairs.
Treacherous.
I've been a fan forever, but I don't know why we haven't had you on to talk about Black Monument Ensemble, which is truly an amazing project.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Can you take us through the roots of this ambitious collective of so many talented musicians, and of course you at the center, musical collage artist? How did it come together?
It started probably when I started working and teaching art in prison at Stateville Correctional Center through an organization called Prison and Neighborhood Arts and Education Project. After my first semester inside the prison system, working on a project, an animation project, I was going in, seeing the justice system up close, and I was coming out, and Michael Brown was murdered. You know, It was just a time period that was really fraught, not unlike the many fraught time periods we've had since.
No.
But I really felt like I needed to explore the ideas and process what was happening sonically. So I started doing these solo sound projects where I was pulling records that were coming from the civil rights era, whether it's like Angela Davis talking about incarceration.
And I'm talking about all of the sisters and brothers who are victims of the system, who are easy targets of the police, who get railroaded through the courts into prison, often for no reason at all.
Or Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis, you know, reading Langston Hughes poems.
What can purge my heart of the song and the sadness? What can purge my heart but the song of the sadness? What can purge my heart of the sadness of the song?
I was just kind of making layers so we can hear these conversations people have been having for decades around the same issues that we're having now. And from that very first performance, I had a percussionist with me and wrote a song that we performed at the end of this kind of sound collage. And as I kept performing these sound pieces, I really started to listen to more records from the 60s and start to, you know, really think about how gospel was the soundtrack for the civil rights era. And thinking about how this time really reflects so many aspects of that era in terms of civil rights being stripped away. And I thought, well, you know, obviously gospel was a community space for Black Americans, a space where our political leaders came from. And so gospel was a logical expression of the time. But I was starting to think that maybe it was actually the times calling for multiple Black voices in song to kind of, you know, express this. So I thought, well, what if I got together in the kind of gospel tradition, but not specifically gospel music to address these issues, you know? So I culled together five singers with the help of Josephine Lee from the Chicago Children's Choir, because originally they were all graduates from the choir. And then we kind of expanded from there. Different people kind of changed in and changed out. And once I had the vocalists locked in, I kind of was able to expand the musicians as well and then add dance into it. And so it became the dream scenario of all the different, not all the performance mediums, but a bunch of performance mediums.
Well, you mentioned gospel and also jazz. I mean, you look at Max Roach and Mingus and artists of that ilk who are doing protest art through their music, very overtly addressing what was going on in America at that time. And you're bringing that element in, too. This is a gospel, jazz, it's a stew of different things going on, you know, movie clips, etc. The fact that this was made under very trying conditions, it was not a traditional recording for you, right? I mean, it was not like a typical, you can't get, you know, a dozen people in a room and like, hey, let's make music together. How did you negotiate that whole deal?
So, yeah, the first record, Where Future Unfolds, was a live concert recording, right? It was recorded at the end of 2018 and released in 2019. In 2020, in the summer, during the kind of uprisings in response to the murders of Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd, I found that people were like returning to Where Future Unfolds. Instagram was letting me know that people were playing it a lot to help process that time. Started to think, what would it sound like if Black Monument said something now? So I got to writing new material. I wasn't going anywhere. I was in my apartment. So the process was totally different. I was making demos myself of the songs and trying to figure out how I could record 10 people, you know, in a time, especially with like five or six vocalists in a time where we are most scared of breath as I've ever been in my life.
Potentially deadly to breathe in a group. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When we return, we're going to hear how Damon managed to record Black Monument Ensemble's album now in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
If you had pleaded guilty, you would have already been out of...
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back. Before the break, Damon Locks was explaining how he convened his Black Monument Ensemble to record the new album now in the summer of 2020 when the world was shut down.
I reached out to the group to see if they were game, and they were game. And then I reached out to Alex Inglesian over at Experimental Sound Studio and said, hey, would you be interested in doing a recording session in the backyard of the Experimental Sound Studio? So we set up the very first, I broke the group up in kind of half. The vocalist, clarinetist, and myself did a session in the backyard of ESS 2 days. The first day was like 93 degrees. The second day was 98 degrees in the backyard. There's one tree, which wasn't shading us the whole time. And then the next session was a month later in the studio, social distance, you know, with the percussionist, the drummer, and the cornet player. Everything was different about this recording. Oftentimes when you record, you do a take, go to the control room, listen back to the take, and then say, okay, let's do another. This was all about, like, how did that feel? Did that feel good? Okay, let's move on. Let's do another one. Cicadas were roaring throughout the recording, and I just had to hope that this is going to sound good, you know?
Yeah. So, well, as you said, sometimes they blessed you by being in time with the polyrhythmic percussion and drums.
Yeah, they really locked in.
They got the groove. Yeah. I was wondering about the historical precedents, especially in Chicago, Damon. To me, there are times where this feels like Art Ensemble of Chicago. There's times where it feels like Sun Ra's orchestra, you know? And I was wondering how much improvisation and spontaneity there is in Now.
The whole project was really going off of the intuition of the separate musicians and trying to follow my intuition as well. So I wrote demos, right, that were essentially the skeleton or the kind of the architecture of the song, knowing that people would be able to bring all of their skills to bear on the tune. So, for example, Angel, who plays clarinet, Ben, who plays cornet, Dana and Arif, I wrote nothing for them. I just wrote the structure of the song. And then I said, and once we got to the recording session, I'm like, let's do it. And they brought their A game and filled in where they felt like it needed to be. So I wasn't really dictating what they were going to do. When it comes to the vocalists, of course, there's a lead line. There's the lead melody that goes through the whole thing. But they spent a lot of time fleshing out that lead line, finding the harmonies, finding the different colors. For example, Eric, who is one of the singers, did a lot of groundwork on the song Now, Forever, Momentary Space, and kind of brought to the table all of these harmonies. And some of the ideas weren't ideas that I had already, so I had to, in the moment, like, shift the song structure around to be like, okay, well, let's put that in here and do this. So we had to really, like, condense the process into this two-day recording session, where normally it would be over the course of rehearsals, playing a show, you know, tweaking, changing. Yeah. So it all happened in a condensed moment. You know, the fact that it worked is a credit to their connection to the material and to their own artistry.
And it seems like the music is meeting the moment. You've taken on this gigantic project. In some ways, I think that your career has sort of been building to this moment. There's this element of serendipity to anything, right? But, I mean, do you feel like in some ways you had sort of been aiming for this kind of a scale of a project for a long time? Or did the moment just occurred and here it is? You know, I'm curious about your thinking about your art in particular in this broader context that you've presented it in now.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It does feel like there has been a kind of a trajectory towards this, right? As you said, like, this is the culmination of a bunch of things. I think that I've learned enough over time to be able to, you know, mount this type of project. Had I not spent 10 years working with Rob Mazurek and the Exploding Star Orchestra, where improvisation on my part was really, like, paramount in that collaboration, and also seeing how he runs a large ensemble, had I not spent multiple years with the Eternals and with the last Eternals record, Espiritu Zombie, where we became a 10-piece, and I had to have vocal practice with Tamika and Janine.
Walk in.
If I had not done all those things, if I hadn't spent several years working in prison and dealing with trying to elevate voices that don't get heard, if I hadn't spent 4 years working in the CPS, working with students, focusing on civically engaged contemporary art, then Black Monument wouldn't be what it is. But I have to say, you know, some of my earliest, like, influences, like the Specials, yeah, you know, yeah, are still things that resonate with me, whether it's Ghost Town by the Specials.
This town is coming like a ghost town. All the clubs are being closed down.
Or Public Enemy, or listening to Sun Ra, or Phil Karan. Like, all of these things have been in play the whole time I've been listening to music, and I just had to educate myself enough or have enough experience that I could make the work on the level that I'm interested in doing, which is a work that connects with community and connects with people's lives in present day, and is not so much based on the trends of the music scene.
Where Future Unfolds was 4 or 5 years in the unfolding, mm-hmm. comes out in 2019, and now, you know, is recorded 2020, comes out right away. That immediacy is there.
Yeah.
I want to dial it back a little bit to you coming to Chicago in the first place, and I love that idea that you saw some people at the School of the Art Institute that were weird, and you thought, I'm down with this. Yeah. So my question, Damon, is Chicago still weird?
Yeah, Chicago's weird. Yeah. But weird is a shifting plate. You know what I mean? When I came to Chicago, you know, a mohawk and a leather jacket and tattoos were weird. It's not that weird anymore, you know? So yeah. You have to kind of think about what you're looking for. So I was looking for, at the time, I was looking for people that thought outside of the box. And they looked a certain way at that time. I'm still looking for people that think outside the box, you know, and there are plenty of people that are doing that work and doing that thought process that I respect and can connect to. I think this is a time period where people are really connecting to history in a way that I had not seen yeah. previously. So the work of the AACM and groups like the Art Ensemble and Sun Ra are very relevant to a lot of today's musicians and performers in the same way that Nina Simone, James Baldwin, all of these people are making connections to today. And that's not something that was traditional. Most of the time, kind of the past was the past, and I always lamented that the strong connections weren't being made. And it's so wonderful right now to see that we're looking at time in a different way. So the things that are relevant are still relevant.
I remember Art Ensemble playing the Chicago Jazz Fest, which was such a huge educational thing for me, seeing all those great jazz bands back then. But Stan Getz played right before them, and Art Ensemble came on, and that's the moment we were waiting for. But it turned out like 95% of the audience, they couldn't get out of there fast enough. It's like, you know, there would be a bomb scare, and they were like fleeing, like, you know, we got to escape. But it's like time catches up with stuff, you know, like the what was weird in the 80s is like, now we understand what they were saying, at least, you know, people who weren't hip to it back then. And in some ways, that idea of being outside the box is so important. Your music strikes me as being outside the box too, because people want to put stuff in a box and they can't. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that is a guiding principle in making a record like this, or in general for your career, the kind of records you've made, that people can't identify what is this.
That has been something that has, you know, trailed through my musical career, not being able to really categorize exactly, you know, but I never really thought too much about it, because I always thought that you're trying to make the work that speaks to you with the influences that you have, and however it comes out, it's going to sound like you. So genres were never super important to me. One of the reasons why it's hard to define, say, Black Monument Ensemble is because of the influence and the mastery that the musicians bring to the table. Someone like Dana Hall, who is a phenomenal jazz drummer, Arif Smith, percussionist, knows a wide span of the percussion languages. So within that, they can bring rhythms that come from all over kind of the African diaspora, and probably, you know, the rock world as well. They are kind of threading that through the music as well. So you're getting all these layers along with the gospel and the soul and probably the punk and the, you know, so all of everyone's identities are coming through within that. And then you throw, I mean, my goodness, for me, the first record, there was a song, Rebuild a Nation, and you throw in Raina Golding in the opening of that, which was at the time she was like 8-year-old. So this young 8-year-old opening the song, talking about rebuilding a nation and how she can rebuild a nation.
I can rebuild a nation. I can rebuild a nation. I can rebuild a nation, no longer working,
yeah.
No longer working out,
yeah, baby.
No longer working out.
I can rebuild.
these are things that I can't do on my own, you know? These are layers of kind of beauty and community, and it feels larger. And so that's why I feel like it's harder to encapsulate what Black Monument Ensemble is.
All right.
Cool. That's great. Mm-hmm. We have been talking with Damon Lux about, many, many things. And most importantly, Black Monument Ensemble. Damon, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet.
We can rebuild the nation. Who can rebuild the nation that's out of touch?
Do you have thoughts on Black Monument Ensemble? Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. And as often as possible, we like to add a song that we cannot live without to the Desert Island Jukebox, especially when we've lost a musician we love. This week, it's Greg's turn. I love this guy too, Greg.
We're talking about Biz Markie, who is one of the all-time great hip-hop MCs and a human beatbox, one of the pioneers of that.
Yeah.
and also an incredible humorist, satirist, vocalist, distinctive, larger-than-life personality. You know, when you think about the 80s, the golden age of hip-hop, which is when Biz started making records, he had some stiff competition out there. You know, the same year that his debut album came out, we had great records by the likes of people like Public Enemy, mm-hmm. Ultra Magnetic MCs, Boogie Down Productions, N.W.A., Big Daddy Kane, who was his friend, EPMD. Biz stood out. You know, they were all distinctive. They all had their own sound. You had to have your own thing to make a dent in that kind of marketplace where hip-hop was just exploding with creativity. Marcel Theo Hall, you know, he didn't talk a lot about his childhood, but you got the sense it was pretty rough. You know, he grew up primarily in Harlem and then moved to Long Island. You know, started working with the Juice Crew. He was the goofball member of the Juice Crew. They had some really big names in there. Big Daddy Kane, as I mentioned, Kool G Rap. Marley Marl was the key producer of that group. He sort of brought Biz in, saw this kid's special. Started out as the human beatbox, you know. Yeah. He was going to do that. That's his thing. He kind of does that. Then realized, oh, this kid's a pretty good rapper, too. And then when the kid tries to sing, they go, that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah.
Nobody else thought Biz could sing. I mean, we have now seen this song, You Got What I Need, used in so many TV commercials. People, it has like a second, third, fourth life because people love this song so much. It was a huge hit when it came out in the late 80s. It's still a huge hit in people's minds. A lot of the thing about the song is it's so distinctive. Biz kind of lets it go. He said, you know, I was waiting for somebody to come in and sing that hook for me, you know, but nobody came in, so I decided to do it myself.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
was a great time, Jim, because none of the big label executives knew what to do with hip-hop.
Right.
So they just let these guys do their own
thing.
Try
anything
you want. Do what you want, and they let Biz sing the hook on this song. Like, yeah. Nowadays, some producer would be going, no, we got to get a real singer in here. Biz is off-key. He's kind of, but he's really into it. You know, he's saying, hey, you know, I'm mourning this. I'm upset. You know, people could relate to him. You know, he was Biz Markie, but he was all of us. All of us could relate to that song. Yeah. Everybody wants to sing along with it. So he was such a charming, big-hearted personality that he cut a huge swath through hip-hop. And then he got buried by that ridiculous court case where he sampled the Gilbert O'Sullivan tune. And you know what's sad is that Biz's career is sometimes reduced to that. That's the most famous moment in his career, because it was the first time the courts ever got involved in legislating what music could be.
A series of bad precedents.
And terrible precedent. But Biz was at the center of it. And unfortunately, he's remembered by a lot of people simply for that. Well, trust me,
there's
so much more to Biz Markie. You Got What I Need is incredible. But I want to play another track from that debut album in the late 80s, The Vapors, where he talks about growing up and the hardships that he went through. And now people who hated him back then thought he was goofy and nutso and not particularly talented, just a prankster. Hey, we want to, you know, get to know you a little bit better. Sorry we were so jerky to you back then, but we really like you now.
Can we borrow some money?
And he says, you're all smelling the vapors. You know, all want a piece of this action now, but you didn't back then. And it was Biz's version of a diss track, which I just love the fact that he even put his own spin on that. The Vapors from the great late Bismarck, he dead at the age of 57 on Sound of Pain.
When I was a teenager, I wanted to be down with a lot of MTGJ and crews in town. Source crew on Noble Street, I said, can I be down? Champ, they said, no one treated me like a wet food stamp. After getting rejected, I was very depressed. Sat and wrote some death Deuteron at my rest. When I used to come to parties, they make me pay. Would have to beg to get on the mic and rap that day. I was never into girls, I was just into my music. To act like I wanted to keep instead of trying to use it. But now things switch without belief. Your biz, do you remember me for Noble Street Chief? We used to be down back in the days. It happens all the time and never cease to amaze. They caught the vapors.
Bismarck, the vapors, great stuff, Greg. That was a unique individual. 100% himself.
Absolutely right, Jim. And we want to ask people if they have a favorite memory of Bismarck. Tell us your story on our website, soundopinions.org. Your comments might be used on a future show in a segment like this.
New messages.
Hey, Jim and Greg. My name's Topher. I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin. I just wanted to respond to your review of LW, the new King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard album. And I haven't listened to this album yet. Like you said, it's kind of daunting where to get in on their catalog. I think their first one, the Flying Microtonal Banana, is also a great record. But if you really want to get this band, I can't speak more highly of seeing them live. If you see this band live, there's no way you can come away dismissing them as just sort of a garage band freakout. It's so apparent the control, the number of gears that they have when they perform. King Gizzard strong as a band live. So if you get a chance, go check them out. Thanks.
Love your show, but you really missed the mark on the Taylor Swift folklore piece. You needed to look beyond the obvious superficial critique. I'm 52 and hated her previous work, but this is poetry, it's artistry, and Aaron Dessner knew not to treat it like all the other sickeningly sweet iced tea pop, because it would have diminished the brilliance of the lyrics and its interplay with her carefully chosen pop melodies. Evermore took a few more listens, but it also is fabulous. I really hope that she continues to make art. Thanks.
Been saying yes instead of no. I thought I saw you at the bus stop. I didn't though. I hit the ground running each night. I hit the Sunday matinee. You know the greatest films of all time were never made.
Hi, Sound Opinions. Long-time listener, but first time I've ever tried this.
I've got a band that is definitely a hidden gem for you. It's Prick. I think they were on the Nothing label. Give yourself 45 minutes on a good set of headphones or a good set of surround and listen to that. It's really a pretty surprisingly good album. Thanks for hearing me. Have a good day.
Your show on the radio and shocked at as you guys age you still stay current with music, so great job on that. Other thing I'd like to recommend or suggest, you guys should have a show highlighting the best last songs of records. I think it'd be a good debatable topic. Keep doing what you're doing, guys.
No more messages.
It is so much fun to hear from our listeners, Greg. We are going to be doing more of that now that we're in the swing of things. What do we have on the show next week?
Jim, there's an illuminating new documentary film out on Woodstock 99. And we're going to talk about that next week.
Not the Summer of Love. And we'll also have some guest Desert Island Jukebox picks. And listeners, please participate in our Sound Opinion Survey. We are doing this to help focus our resources, make the show more sustainable. People have asked if we're getting rich on this. And we want to learn more about what you love about the show and what you think can be better. We're going to open this until July 31st to take the survey. Just go to soundopinions.org. The link will be on our homepage. For more Sound Opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor at soundopinions.org. That's sponsor at soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our intern Sol Delgadillo, and our social media consultant, Katie Cott.